During the month of March, we will be focusing on the presidency and chancellor role. There's been a great deal of discussion about how difficult the job of college president is, how lonely it may feel, and how presidents and chancellors find themselves in, frankly, a no-win situation, especially during times of public disagreement and dissonance. I wanted to ask one of my favorite campus leaders to come on the show and speak to his experience leading a large public community college, especially in this time of decaying public trust in higher education. Dr. Stacy Klippenstein is the president of Mojave Community College in Arizona. The college has four campuses that are scattered across the state. He likes to remind us that it takes him about 10 hours to get from campus to campus because there's a little hole in the ground called the Grand Canyon dividing up the state. Dr. Klippenstein has a very specific viewpoint as to the value and the role of community college education that I believe is absolutely transferable to anyone working in higher education leadership, regardless of the size of the institution, the type of the institution, or where it's located. I hope you enjoy this episode with my friend, Stacy Klippenstein.
So, as Stacy, I've got this bronchitis that I'm working through, and for my listeners, this is going to be something you hear for probably a few shows. And this week we got back to teaching, and one of my colleagues came into my office and gave me this little speaker and a little headset. It's like a little Madonna headset, and the speaker goes on my belt. And now he goes, I don't want you to lose your voice because it's like a 3-hour class that I teach. And so I had this thing. I had this little microphone. And I'm now decided I'm not giving it back because I'm just going to wear it to like the supermarket.
You should.
I should. I think it'll be fun. It'll be kind of this like hey, I need you to help me.
You have the best radio voice I've ever heard right now. I just want you to know that.
I'm going back to my AM radio days when I used to do easy listening, and I'd be like, and that was Steve and Edie with You Are the Sunshine of My Life. You
are the I love it. No, this is great. Like I'll try to match it
okay.
As we go through, right? I'll try to get my radio voice on as best as possible.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I am very, very pleased to have Stacy Klippenstein, Dr. Stacy Klippenstein here. Stacy is a friend and is the president at Mojave Community College. And tell the listeners a little bit about your wonderful campus.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you very much, Laura, as well. Yes, old friends from, I think, back in your Mount Ida days. Is that correct? Right?
That's right.
So, yes, Mojave Community College is located in the northwestern part of Arizona. Mojave County itself is the fifth largest county in the United States. It also has one of the biggest holes in the middle of it. As I have said before, it's the Grand Canyon makes it very difficult to go from our North Mojave campus all the way down to Lake Havasu campus. But we do have four campus locations over this very large geographical area, all the way from south part of the county with Lake Havasu. Many of you probably remember the MTV 1980s MTV spring break days when they would show it from Lake Havasu from Kokomo's right there on the water. So up to Bullhead City, which is on the Colorado River across from Laughlin, Nevada. And then Kingman, Arizona is where the district office is at. And then we have a North Mojave campus which is right on the Utah border. So a very large geographical area that the community college serves. And we serve over 5,000 students in enrollment for credit style programs and over another 1,000 or so that are in non-credit with the growth in actual non-credit training specific for industry credentials. So that's growing massively as well. But that's who we serve. It's a very interesting location in northern northwest Arizona. And it's a pleasure to be the proud president of Mojave Community College.
That's great. And Stacy came from presidency up in Montana previously. And I think that his background or your background is a student affairs background. And We talked about this a little bit in the preparation, is that just over 90%, maybe a bit higher than that, college presidents right now come from anywhere but student affairs. They come really from that more of your traditional academic pathway. And I felt that it was important to have someone who, A, I respect as a practitioner and as a leader, come on the show. But I also wanted someone from a student affairs perspective. Last year, we did have Dr. Walter Kimbrough, former president at one of the HBCUs down in Louisiana. And he talked specifically around the fact that he felt that his preparation being former vice president for student affairs was really intentionally important for him in terms of his success in that role, and wishes there was a bit more of that student centeredness and all of the things that come with that. And that idea of being reimagining the student affairs role as a preparation to being a president is something I want to talk a bit about today with you, but also this idea of maybe does the student affairs role need to redefine itself, change some of the portfolio overall and that sort of thing. I think that where I want to start with you is, as you've been sitting in the seat of president as two institutions, it's a very complicated reality of being a university president and a college president. And here in the United States, we have, it's now decreasing in some ways. Some of these smaller institutions are going by the wayside, unfortunately, including Mount Ida. But community colleges, small colleges, large publics and privates are this interwoven opportunity for us to have a very unique higher education experience. It's unique from any other country in the world. To say there's one way to be a college president, I think is ludicrous. Okay, there's no one way to do it. As you've sat here in this seat and you've interacted with other college presidents and you've seen the complexity of the job, talk to me a bit more about what it is that kind of reimagining the role might look like in your mind. What are some of the benefits? And being student-centered and specifically looking at it through that student-centered lens, why is that so important for a college and university president to be student-centered?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great question and is becoming more and more relevant today. And why I say that is when you look at the presidency role, and I think there has been shifts over the years. If you look at the last probably 50 years, let's say 20 years, I would say that the student-centered focused president is becoming more relevant, both for what I would consider hiring boards who are seeing certain trends of enrollment decline, of persistence issues, also better understanding who the student is on their college or university campus, and having somebody with that background, understanding, expertise, training, education that can come in and help best understand how to move and shape a university or college environment in a direction, I think has caused for some pause in who should be in that seat, and has then elevated in some ways, I would think, those with that background, and therefore the people who are best suited for that would be those who have come up through that student affairs style ranks. So I think that is an extremely important aspect to remember. One thing I was thinking of in preparation for this is you can read different, probably the last 5 years, research in regards to the competencies required to be a college president or university president. And there's some commonalities within that. We can all say overarching, but you nailed it on the head perfectly in regards to there is no exact one way to do it. And each university or college is going to focus in on that presidency or that chief student affairs officer in need for that within their own environment and realm and whatever as reality that they live in. And I would say more and more that reality is becoming the heightened need of a competent individual who can come in and say, if we're truly going to be student-centered, what does that mean? And then being able to wrap around all the larger overall aspects of what that should be. And I think that's just what is more important these days and become more relevant.
Well, I was making a hand motion about the student-centeredness because I think that like, what does that mean on your campus absolutely is an essential conversation. And I think if you were to go office to office, even at the same institution, say, what does it mean to be student-centered here at X University? You're going to get different answers. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best leaders I've seen in practice are the ones who, when they put out there that this is what the student experience or student-centeredness looks like on their campus, people all the way through the organization can not just repeat what they said, but take what that leader said and put it into application in what the work is that they do in that office. So if a college president says student-centeredness looks like XYZ on our campus, the registrar applies it to their space, and a professor or a chair of a certain department puts it into practice in their space. The librarian, the chief librarian, says it in their space. That to me is where it actually comes into practice. It's one thing to put a plaque on a wall to say, this is what we care about. This is our mission. This is how we are student centered. But the actual application is the difference. Do you see that as something in your leadership that you try to emulate with your team, and how do you actually make that kind of permeate into your environment, and how challenging is it as you said, you have multiple campuses divided by a major land hole. Do you get that to actually work in practice?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of leadership concepts within that, right? So we can go down that path of just being a leader in sharing your inspired vision and getting people to kind of understand what that means. I think the nice thing is that being student-centered and being student-focused and therefore hoping that you can lead students to achieving that certain dream at the end, most people, as you said, most people understand that but they apply it in their own world. And I think trying to incorporate that and bring that together as best as possible in that common vision is required. And having somebody who has, I would say, a broader understanding of when you say being student-centered, student-focused, student success, student achievement, there's many aspects that go into that. And I would say through our experiences in education and student affairs, we are one of the few true professional people on a college university campus that have been able to study, understand, applied in multiple levels. As you might remember, okay, so you start off as a hall director. Okay, what does that look like? Okay, all of a sudden you're doing stuff in student activities. What does that look like? All the stuff you're doing, stuff in major auxiliaries or overseeing athletics, all of those things. And then also you're in the classroom.
Right.
You're teaching an RA a psychology class for RAs, whatever else it may be. You get that bigger, broader aspect. So for me coming in, it was pretty easy as we started our strategic planning process to keep that student focus and student centered approach in mind, and being able to constantly keep that in front of folks about what is that overarching meaning and what is that overarching desired outcome. And I think then, as you said, then that faculty member says, okay, I understand that this is a true part of our mission and vision. Right. I hear from the president. I know he has this background and has seen it work within whatever it be, student affairs or in the classroom, and can apply certain aspects of that within the classroom. And then you get the enrollment managers who apply that, the recruiters, the advisors. And then at the same time, then you have that focus that is within your administrative services side. So to have somebody who can also then speak to your support functions like in IT and facilities and the business and bursar's office, those are all very, very important aspects. And so I think just it is being in the profession, it's almost innate.
Yeah.
And that feeling of when I come to work, I'm worried about these students and that mm-hmm. success aspect, I'm not coming in worried about my research project.
Right.
Right. And I think because of that innateness in that background that we have, mm-hmm. it makes it easier when you're a college president to kind of share that and help guide that, because you're constantly talking about it because that's where your mind is always at.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate that. And I think that there's also that layer of when you were looking at some of the better chief student affairs officers, they're very good operationally. They're very good being able, you brought up this idea of like, I'm not worried about my research project. I'm not worried about this. I'm not worried about that. A really good chief student affairs officer, good leader, is a very good delegator. And this goes into other, obviously other functional areas. But I think that student affairs is a kind of place where, you know, from my own experience, from your experience, you could be doing like, yes, I came up through the Res Life world. So anytime a Res Life thing comes up, like, what are we talking about today? I know how to do that. Let's talk about it. But I am not someone who knows how to run a health center. I have to defer to an expertise that is a functional expertise. I can talk my way through what does it mean to be ADA compliant and does our disability services office do what we need to be doing? But I need the practitioners in that office to say, oh, this changed or this is new or, oh, this is a problem. I'm going to raise a red flag and all that. And I'm going to leave it to the experts in that area to not only raise red flags, but be able to set up processes that work for our students and remain student focused and that sort of thing. There's an operational piece here. And I wonder if we need to start to encourage some campuses or some places. It may not work on every campus, but I wonder if that if we reframe the chief student affairs officer to be something more of a chief operations officer, would that maybe move the student affairs area to a higher plane in what I'm seeing has been a real decline in the student affairs political positionality at institutions? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question and great opportunity. I do agree that I think in some cases there has been a slight decline in understanding, and that sometimes causes me pause and like, what is going on truly? Yeah. If that is, well, if that
theories.
Is the case, right? Yeah. Yeah. Right. And it's one of those where if you take a look at the trends of today's students, and I'm going to reflect a little bit on the community college. When you have 70% of your students are first gen, you're running 60% or low income. We have mm-hmm. a high veteran population. When you take a look at students with food insecurities and you take a look at students now that we're a Hispanic serving institution and take a look at being marginalized or the feeling of being marginalized, that whole aspect of that student life outside the classroom starts to come into play, right? Family yeah. life and so forth. And for a student affairs, people with a student affairs background, to not be heightened to a point of importance for a college or university president, to me, I think is a failure. Mm. I think they need to flip that. So you're right. What needs to help heighten in a way that role? Because there is such an extreme importance if you really truly look at the trends of our students who are coming. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, do you change it in a by title, maybe mm-hmm. changes the mindset a little bit. But I really do hope that college and university presidents in their training and they're going to their national conferences or whatever else it may be, maybe that's where we need to infuse in, right? Maybe you and right. I need to go do some presentations just to get them to understand the broader aspect. And I will say, just from going to like the American Association of Community Colleges, where a lot of presidents show up, the Association of Community College Trustees, where you get CEOs and trustees together, there is becoming a lot more focus in on the student success, student-centered approach yeah. of helping all these different spectrum of students. And I would say that I'm seeing more of an understanding of the importance of people who play outside the classroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in the classroom, right? Yeah. It's more. So I think there is potential for growth. But you're right. What do we call ourselves to right. heighten that awareness? I think as over the next 10, 15 years, you look at the exodus of college and university presidents just by retirement, let's yeah. say, or just the yeah. strain of the pandemic and causing that downturn, I think you're going to see more people from outside the academic area, such as student affairs, advancement officers, maybe even chief business officers, mm-hmm. playing more of a vital role in the presidency. Yeah. I would imagine like a CBO would best understand that if I'm coming in and I only have this expertise, I need this expertise on the student side. So therefore, that student affairs person that I know, that VP, I need them to be in some sort of special assistant to me on my hip, ready to go. And so I think it will heighten that way.
Let's drill into that a little bit. Student affairs folk sometimes are not as politically savvy as we want them to be. Okay. I'm just going to say student affairs folks. I'm going to say academicians aren't great on the political acumen area. But I think that when you look at that idea of like that special assistant role, and what does that actually look like? There is an actual opportunity there to put the student affairs and the student life side on the, as you said, like right on the hip of the president to say, look, this is here and we need this to be part of the conversation on an intentional way. Like I think a lot of times presidents they know the students are what they're here for, I think. But there is some of that idea of like, well, we need to get this amount of research done. We need to be this way. We need to be that way. And even if we move into the community college area, it's we need to be political. We need to be right up there with the governor. I mean, I look at your LinkedIn. You're there with the governor of Arizona. You're doing all this kind of stuff. And like, well, where's the students in all of this? Well, your LinkedIn is also like, I'll give you props, Stacey. You have just as many pictures with Governor Hobbs as you do with all of those wonderful students of yours, if not more on your student side, obviously. But I think that when we look at where we can position ourselves, I think we are still coming out of the pandemic in terms of people's understanding of who we are. I think this is hurting student affairs I do recruitment for our master's program at Boston College, and people like, how many people are coming in? We've got a nice group of people who have applied and have gotten in, but the sheer volume of people interested in the field is not what it once was, because this last group of your traditional age students are not seeing student affairs as being the helpers that we once were. We were the masking and COVID police. We were not part of that. I think it also brought us down in terms of our political position, in that we were the ones who were delivering food to people in residence halls. We were the ones staffing the food pantries on campus, keeping them open, which all those things are very important. But those things where you're going to have people, especially your CFOs and people in some of the other executive offices, going, you don't need a master's degree to do that. Who are these people? And it's bringing that piece down. I have this, like, maybe it's my cold, maybe it's I'm hangry. What is it? But am I being a little too down on this, or do you think that I am going in the right direction?
Snicker bar. No,
I would kill for a Snicker bar.
Yeah, you would kill for a Snickers right now. I think there is some relevancy to that point. I think there is something that's out there that probably maybe during a pandemic, post-pandemic view of the role, and therefore what is that educational requirement for these roles is becoming more prevalent. But I would say it also, I'll just go on a more optimistic kind of view of it, is that in some ways,
take me out of my hole here.
Well, I'm trying to feed you the Snicker bar here, maybe, is that in some cases, and I would imagine across the United States, college universities presidents and community college presidents working as a CEO during the pandemic probably recognized that what helped students get through that wasn't a message from the IT department about how to get Wi-Fi in the parking lot. It wasn't exactly that. There was an area of the college or university of people who have expertise who actually became even more needed for those students, and that student success was handled by a lot of those people with that background of what we grew up in, right? In that student affairs site. So I would think that probably some have walked away saying, well, wait a minute. We were successful because of this. This role is going to be continually be important for our college university. Now it gets into, do people view the educational level as needed? I'm still a big fan of both the master's and the doctorate. And I think with how long we have been in it, I think what the student affairs profession, you can say, really has been around for at least 70 years, right? Since the 50s easily. And it has become more of a art, heart, and science of the college and university. And I think the more that we have people with that expertise and background who have studied it, have researched it, they will be heightened at the table because their voice of saying this is important. This is an integral part of who we are as a college and university. And these are all the components we can do to help the college and university meet the mission, the vision, and the strategic goals of the institution.
Yeah.
Because I would guarantee you, if you go through and do a research project of all strategic plans and mission and vision statements, I would bet you 90% of them have a strong focus on some sort of student.
Yeah.
Right.
No, they
and
do.
It's not all, it's not all in the classroom.
No, absolutely. And I think I teach strategic planning, and one of the things that we go through is we ask, like, go look at the mission statement at these institutions. And some of them are just word salad. Like, some of them, it's like, you're like, oh my God. But in all seriousness, like, your mission should be short, should be punchy, should be very direct. That's your mission. But the values is where you kind of start seeing that. And that's where you start to see the student stuff. And you see the diversity statement, and you see a bunch of different things that are, we actually, in one of the classes a couple semesters ago, we did it, and we did almost like a bingo format that if you could fill in like any of these key words in this, you get a bingo card, right? Kind of thing. And ultimately what you want is that it to be authentic. And that's what I say to students. And that's what I say to when I'm coaching someone, or I'm working with a mentee, and they're trying to decide, is this a good place for me? And is student affairs going to be valued? I say, first and foremost, number one, look at the org chart. Who does student affairs report to? Not just where you are going to report to, but where does student affairs report to? Does student affairs have a seat at the table? Okay, let's say the other option is, if it doesn't have the seat at the executive level, does it report to the provost, or does it report to the CFO? If it goes to one of those two, or enrollment. So now enrollment, CFO, or the president, or the provost is going to tell you a very different story about what the priorities are of that institution. Now look at the values. If you see all this stuff in the values where you say, well, the vice president for student affairs is definitely at the table, blah, blah, blah. Look, the values actually line up. Fantastic. Now, if the student affairs vice president is at the table and none of the values align with student affairs friendly areas, that says something about the leadership too. Now, if you go over to that, well, doesn't report, it's not at the seat at the table, and it's boom, 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 boom. Who is it reporting to? And it's got all this cockamamie stuff about students being a priority. That's bullshit. Because if it was actually important, it would be reporting someone else. And that's why people literally go, all right, good. I'm glad I talked to you. Bye. And I don't mean to say that in a way that is a downer. It's like, look, you have a great opportunity here, but you want to make sure that if you're making that next move, you've got to go to a place where things are working. And you're a big strategic plan guy, and you are excellent at strategic planning. And I even say to them, if you go to their website and the student affairs division doesn't have an up-to-date strategic plan that is out there and visible and is even referred to, and if worse, if the institution is lagging behind. Now, we know our accreditors now are all over our butts about strategic planning, and most of the time institutions have them up and front and center, but it has to be there. Do you think that when an institution is looking at a strategic plan, is there an opportunity there for student affairs to be beyond the niche areas of student affairs? Should they be in there for conversations around the academic programs? What are your thoughts on that in terms of, are we not staying in our lane, but we know that we can actually be beneficial?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, now that I know I can swear, I'm ready to go. And so
you should have said that at the
beginning. Bullshit is right. So there you go. But what I agree with you. I'm going to give two different experiences. So when I was at Montana State University Billings as the chief student affairs and enrollment officer, we went through a strategic planning process and yeah, there were values discussed. And again, this is back, 17 years ago, 18 years ago, but there were values discussed. We had a vision and a mission, and it was about access and success. And there were some really good points about students and student centered. I was able to work with just an incredible group of directors and deans within that division and really focus in on what is our strategic plan then. Once we created that and aligned it and we shared that with faculty council, with the provost, the chancellor took that and used that as kind of a model of why aren't we all internally focusing in on that? And it's because we wanted to, and I wanted to make sure our division was extremely relevant throughout the university in regards to what we can do as a support function for academics, number one, a support function for out of the classroom experience for students, number two. Those were all right. It needed to happen, but we needed to put it down on paper with some sort of background of research of all those things to basically substantiate why we're trying to do this. And it had its fun language, right? Its fluffy language, but it was really centered around us being that student focused area for the university. Fast forward to coming to Mojave. I would say that Mojave probably did not have a student affairs function. Aside, there were pockets, right?
Right.
They were kind of built in with certain roles, but not really one that I can rely on and say, you and your expertise is going to help us here. What I did is was able to use the new strategic plan and our four main strategies, our 20 something key objectives, our new values, as well as our mission and vision as a way of reorganizing. So that's the question. If you're going to get into this and look at it as any president coming in, I have a strategic plan. Now I want to make sure I organize to meet that. And therefore, we developed a vice president for student and community engagement. Our deans switched from a more operational dean on each of the campuses to one that had more of a student engagement focus so we can create a different form of student life. And since then, we have grown with a lot more clubs and organizations. We have been able to now, we have a housing project on our Bullhead campus. We are now starting athletics. People are starting to see this different side of what students can be and look like and do. And so I agree that we need to, anybody who is out there who wants to be at the table in the student affairs focus side and wants to support, the best thing they can do is take that strategic plan and find out how they fit.
Yeah.
And then show action towards that.
I'm glad you said that. And I think that's really essential because now higher education is in this real crisis of two areas. Number one is around growth and around how do we sustain ourselves because our number of traditional age college students is going down. And another reason I wanted to have you on, community colleges there are community colleges that are doing very, very well. There was a period of time where we're going, oh God, here we go. Community colleges have been entrepreneurial. They've been able to say, look, this is what we have to do in order to stay relevant, in order for us to grow and not be beholden to one age group of students to come here. Okay. So we've got to do that. The other thing is that higher education is in this real crisis around trust. And there is a national issue here that how people see this. And I wanted people to hear from voices of college presidents who are just like Walter Kimbrough, formerly at Dillard, and you at Mojave. There are people out there who are doing really good stuff and are not necessarily getting the microphone to be able to say, hey, these are the people who are actually, we've got a lot of these folks doing really great work. So let's find out and let's tease this out. I want to talk about how that trust and that need to build trust is connected to the student experience, and that idea of larger value of the institution. And why is that important? I almost feel that someone who embraces larger value as a concept has a little bit more empathy for the student experience than someone who says, oh, but don't you want to earn this degree, and not really understand that that may not be what the student experience is all about? What do you think?
Right. Right. No, I firmly agree that there is a connection between how we work and treat our students and all students. It connects directly to the accountability piece and appreciation piece and acceptance of our communities. I'm going to take it from a reflection of the community college aspect, where if you look at it from three different kind of, I would say, perspectives. One is, we here at Mojave, and this is going on college, community college wide, is that need to be, again, nimble, quick, right? And meet the industry needs and the workforce needs within your communities. That's becoming more and more relevant. You can be a traditional university sitting on the hill and making sure that you have your degree set up and your pathways to a master's degree, and they're all for credit, and we're here for you because our students take our full time. Go to a community college where our students are only taking 6 to 9 credits per semester. They're working full time, right? They're first gen. And you picture that student who's trying to be on this 4-credit pathway to changing their life. It looks a little bit different. So if we're successful with that, that says something to the community, where there is trust.
Right.
That, right. The other one too is why aren't we not being more, I guess, prevalent in the space of the non-credit training, the short-term credential training that is so required in the workforce? It's not a degree pathway. It's I need that 4-week. I need that 3-week. I need to get that test at the end to show and show my boss I have this to move up. And so we need to be much better at that at the community college level. The more we do that and we treat anybody coming in a non-credit training to 4-credit training, whatever, we treat them as a student. So we have a motto, a student is a student is a student.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you're ComEd, you're a corporate ed, short-term training, industry recognized credential, or a certificate degree. We want to treat them as a student. Once you do that and we show that advancement and therefore industry partners, you get more industry partners in with that, that builds trust within your community. So if universities are struggling with that, I would always say take a step back and really focus in on what you're truly doing to support the workforce development of that area. Yes. Community colleges are shining examples of that movement. Mm-hmm. So that would be one on the trust side. The other one too, as a community college, where community is in our middle name, right? So we have to be that place where people can come to and feel, one, safe, but two, be the arena of thought. And the more we do that and you can show both sides of an argument or whatever else, and we are that moderating place, that middle ground, that neutral, but we're going to bring that discussion. I think that also builds trust in some ways as well. The other one too, is we have to pay attention to, is why is trust waning? It's because I'm a local taxpayer and I'm paying into the community college with my property tax, and I don't like what they do, X, Y, and Z. You lose trust.
Right.
We have to, at the community college level, really focus in on that local tax constituent group. Mm-hmm. And so if we can concentrate in those three areas and pay attention to that and how we spend, the community connection, and a student is a student is a student, I think that only builds trust. And we're seeing that, I believe, here at Mojave Community College, because we've kind of taken that to heart.
Yeah. And I think that there is something in that spirit of what you just said, Stacy, that is relevant to of various shapes and sizes. I just ran into someone recently who, I was wearing a Mount Ida shirt because I have a box of them, and I was wearing a Mount Ida shirt, and they said, oh my God, I used to go over there and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, and we had like a nice conversation. And she said, oh, I had a friend who went there, who also had a grandchild who went there, and they met them where they were at from an academic standpoint. And that was something that came through. And that idea of being able to understand who is your population, treat everyone a student, a student is a student. I love that. I think every institution should be thinking that way. Just the fact that we say, are you part-time or full-time? Just saying that out loud messes with people's heads. Like, is it matter? I am paying you money to come here. Okay. I am giving you my time and my attention. And so if you learn nothing from this episode, please, a student is a student is a student. Is a student. And that is huge.
Right. And to be successful in that space, you need to have people who understand that space. And again, it's people like you, me, and others that really have grown up in that space who understand if we're going to say a student is a student is a student, well, it's not just the 25% of the time they're in the classroom. No. It's the 75% of the time they're out of the classroom.
Exactly.
And their life and all that. So, yeah, it's paying attention to all that aspect.
Exactly. And that is why you're a great university president. So thank you very much. You are very kind. No, I'm not blowing smoke up your tush. I mean that. And I mean that in all sincerity, and that this is a great way to end the episode, is that idea of that student affairs professionals bring a great deal to the senior level of the institution at the executive table. And I hope that in the next 15 years, as people are cycling out of the presidency, boards and the search firms start looking more strongly at senior student affairs officers as being viable. I know a lot of them out there right now who would be excellent presidents. And just when you get into the, let's call it the beauty contest of it all, and they look at that, well, they're not a provost. That's all right. It's all right. I think that if what's your mission, or if you say you're student centered, then go with this person. This human right here could give you a lot more. And they know how to run a crisis, which not every provost knows how to run a crisis.
Right.
We didn't even get into that.
Right.
We didn't get into that, but I'm telling you, if you have a crisis, if you want your student affairs person, you don't that. Mm-hmm. I love my provosts, but come on. Let's be serious.
Yep. Put them off to the side. Get your student affairs person in and run that crisis, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Just make sure that the online classes are still running. Okay.
Yeah.
Stacey Klippenstein, thank you so much for being here. And one of these days I'll get out to Arizona and visit all of your campuses. It's going to take a while, but you know, I'll make sure it happens.
We will have some fun, Laura. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate you asking me to be on. So thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that President Klippenstein has inspired you to consider the nuances of executive leadership in higher education. We spend an awful lot of time thinking about what higher ed leadership could be doing better. Perhaps we aren't looking at the right type of institutions for modeling behaviors, especially related to innovation and truly acting in capacity of being a public good. The next episode, we will be discussing another aspect of executive leadership, specifically the role of an interim, and how this may position the institution for a more successful transition, among other aspects of what we need to be considering as far as campus leadership moving forward. I want to thank you for being an off-the-hour listener. In order to grow our community, please rate, review, and share the podcast with your network. I would very much appreciate it. And hey, don't forget the show notes. There you'll find out more information on today's guest. And of course, details on how to follow me on social media and become a subscriber to my newsletter on Substack. I want to thank my wonderful producer, David Yance. Office Hours is a production of Pod 617 Studios in beautiful Westwood, Massachusetts. Now, get out there and learn something.